Lucy Westenra's diary. And we're back, you know that? We're back after a long time. We're back and we're hoping to push through those folk memories of having done nothing with this podcast for many, many months. We're hoping to push through that, the shame, the guilt, the general lack of income from those good people at Spotify. But you will notice, let me turn this off. There we are, that's turned that off. You will notice that having moved from Spotify, I've now taken up an interesting home in a place called Substack, which is a home for writing, but they also do podcasts. Who knows, I might try a bit of writing. Any of you can still read? I'm not sure I can. It's been so long since, we've been required to read anything, including the patient inserts. Lucy Westenra's diary. Lucy Westenra's diary. Hillingham, 24th of August. I must imitate Mina and keep writing things down. Then we can have long talks when we do meet. I wonder when it will be. I wish she were there with me again. Or indeed, more simply, I wish she were with me again, for I feel so unhappy. Last night I seemed to be dreaming again, just as I was at Whitby. Well, I had a little holiday at Whitby. We had a little holiday at Whitby not all that long ago. Let me slide that forward and let me rearrange this. I don't think my eyesight, honestly. Perhaps it's the change of air or getting home again. It's a very nice Italian place in Whitby. Well, we thought it was nice. It's sort of in an odd setup. It's in a big sort of chapel. Seems like an old disused chapel. Well, it's not disused. It's been repurposed as a restaurant, but it's sort of tiered, layered, and it's sort of like sitting in a football stadium. You're up at the back of the stands looking down at the other diners who are on a sort of different terraces. But it was quite nice and the food was good. Very good. Whitby, Yorkshire. Try it. This isn't TripAdvisor, but it was a nice, whatever we had, it was nice. And but it's a long time ago, so I can't remember. But it was Italian. And there's a very nice fish place there as well. Not surprisingly, for Whitby. Anyway, just shut up, get on with it. Perhaps it's the change of air or getting home again. It is all dark and horrid to me, for I can remember nothing. But I'm full of vague fear. Tell me about it. And I feel so weak and worn out. Tell me about it again. When Arthur came to lunch, he looked quite grieved when he saw me, as he tucked into his meat calzone. And I hadn't the spirit to try to be cheerful. I wonder if I could sleep in Mother's room tonight. I shall make an excuse to try. You wonder if you can sleep in Mother's room tonight? Oh, get a grip. 25th of August, another bad night. Mother did not seem to take to my proposal. She was doing some online gambling, some bingo, I think. She seems not too well herself, and doubtless she fears to worry me. I tried to keep awake and succeeded for a while, but when the clock struck 12, it waked me from a doze. Bloody clocks get on your nerves, don't they? Tick-tock, tick-tock. I really cannot stand loud clocks. I suppose you get used to them. They get subsumed into your daily life so that you don't notice them, but I can't be doing with them. Not that you're interested. Why would you be remotely interested? You've come here for Dracula. Not my unholy flappings around. You want the less holy flappings around. More bad dreams. I wish I could remember them. This morning I'm horribly weak. My face is ghastly pale and my throat pains me. It must be something wrong with my lungs, for I don't seem to be getting air enough. I shall try to cheer up when Arthur comes, or else I know he will be miserable to see me so. Well, thanks, Lucy. Letter, Arthur to Dr. Seward. Arthur. Can't quite remember who Arthur is. He's not the American, is he? Let's make him sort of American. Letter, Arthur to Dr. Seward. Albemarle Hotel, 31st of August, my dear Jack. I want you to do me a favour. Lucy is ill. That is, she has no special disease, but she looks awful. Maybe it's Maybelline, and is getting worse every day. I've asked her if there is any cause. I not dare to ask her mother. For to disturb the poor lady's mind about her daughter in her present state of health is terrible. It would be fatal. Mrs. Westenra has confided to me that her doom is spoken. Disease of the heart, myocarditis, as we've come to call it, or possibly pericarditis. How do I know so much about heart diseases over the last 3 years? I don't know. Am I a doctor? Probably not. Disease of the heart, though poor Lucy does not know it yet. Oh, doesn't she? I'm sure that there is something preying on my dear girl's mind. I'm almost distracted when I think of her. To look at her gives me a pang. I know what you're trying to say, Arthur. I told her I should ask you to see her, and though she demurred at first, I know why, old fellow, she finally consented. It will be a painful task for you, I know, old friend, but it is for her sake, and I must not hesitate to ask, or you to act. You are to come to lunch at Hillingham tomorrow. Nuggets, I'm afraid, but you do get a dozen. 2 o'clock, so as not to arouse any suspicion in Mrs. Westenra. And after lunch, Lucy will take an opportunity of being alone with you. I am filled with anxiety and want to consult with you alone as soon as I can, after you have seen her. Do not fail. Arthur. Oh dear, a bit of peakiness. We've peaked. Well, I do hate it when that happens. Telegram. Arthur Homewood to Seward. 1st of September. Am summoned to see my father, who is worse. Am writing. Write me fully by tonight's post to ring. Wire me if necessary. Didn't get any of that, and probably nor did Dr. Seward. A letter from Dr. Seward, who's a bit home counties. No, he's not. He's a bit estuarian. To Arthur Homewood, 2nd of December. My dear old fellow, with regard to Miss Westenra's health, sounds like a costermonger, with regard to Miss Westenra's health, I hasten to let you know at once that, in my opinion, there is not any functional disturbance or any malady that I know of. At the same time, I'm not by any means satisfied with her appearance. Maybe it wasn't Maybelline, maybe it was something cheap from Woolworths. They're easily confused as they sit next to each other on the shelf. She's woefully different from what she was when I saw her last. Of course, you must bear in mind that I did not have full opportunity of examination, such as I should wish. Our very friendship makes a little difficulty which not even medical science or custom can bridge over. I'd better tell you exactly what happened, leaving you to draw, in a measure, your own conclusions. I shall then say what I have done and propose doing. Now, just to remind you that Dr. Seward he runs the loony bin, as we used to say. And it was a bin for loonies. And I think perhaps we treat people a little bit better in some regards today, although we do tend to, you know, fill them with zombifying drugs, which... you know, but luckily we're all very confident in the good intentions of big pharmaceutical companies, especially in the treatment of vulnerable, mentally unwell patients. So I think we're all reassured by that. So in those days, of course, it was horrible insane asylums, which were some of them well run and some of them cruel and horrible, no doubt. I found Miss Westenra in seemingly gay spirits. Her mother was present, and in a few seconds I made up my mind that she was trying all she knew to mislead her mother and prevent her from being anxious. Well, we've all done that, haven't we? I've no doubt she guesses, if she does not know, what need of caution there is. Don't know what that meant. I just said it. We lunched alone, as we all exerted ourselves to be cheerful. We got some kind of reward for our labours, some real cheerfulness amongst us, and the nuggets were particularly good. Pheasant nuggets. We didn't really have chicken nuggets on the menu that day. Then Mrs. Westenra went to lie down, and Lucy was left with me. We went into her boudoir. Until we got there, her gaiety remained, for the servants were coming and going. As soon as the door was closed, however, the mask fell from her face. It was one of those Nightmare on Elm Street masks, not altogether unbecoming. And she sank down into a chair with a great sigh and hid her eyes with her hand. When I saw that her high spirits had failed, I at once took advantage of her reaction to make a diagnosis. "You're quite sad, aren't you? A bit upset. That'll be 40 guineas. No, she said to me very sweetly, "I cannot tell you how I loathe talking about myself." I reminded her that a doctor's confidence was sacred, but that you were grievously anxious about her. She caught on to my meaning at once and settled that matter in a word. "Tell Arthur everything you choose. I do not care for myself, but for him. So I am quite free to tell you everything I choose." I could easily see that she was somewhat bloodless, but I could not see the usual anemic signs. And by the chance, I was able to test the actual quality of her blood. For in opening a window, which was stiff, a cord gave way, and she cut her hand slightly with broken glass. It was a slight matter in itself, but it gave me an evident chance, and I secured a few drops of the blood and have analysed them. Ah, yes, the phlebotomist. Where would the modern doctor be without the phlebotomist to take the blood and send it off for your full panel of blood works? Yeah, they're working up my blood. That's a strange expression, isn't it? Working up. Yes. And then they just read back the table of results. Yeah, a bit low on the B1432, which goes through Stirling. I was able to test the actual quality of her blood. Yeah, okay. The qualitative analysis give a quite normal condition and shows, I should infer, in itself a vigorous state of health. In other physical matters, I was quite satisfied that there is no need for anxiety, but as there must be a cause somewhere, I have come to the conclusion that it must be something mental. Well, you would say that, wouldn't you? Because that's your line of business, and you want to get her booked into the Betty Ford Clinic de Vaujour. That's not very good, is it? Where is my... You know that thing where you're recording away and you think everything's set up and it just kind of goes a bit, a bit annoyingly titsy, as we say, and it has gone a bit titsy. And nevertheless, we'll push on. So the qualitative analysis was okay. It's come back from the lab. Or rather, he's popped a slide under his shiny microscope, had a look, and gone, "Yeah, I think that looks all right." No idea what I'm looking at, but, microbes, probably. Perhaps she's been having a daily sauerkraut or live probiotic capsule, or maybe she's an early employer, an early consumer of one of those Japanese probiotic drinks that Dr. Samazaki introduced into the Richmond Cooperative store back in 1898. So yeah, that does coincide. So she would have had her Yakult from the good doctor, the good Oriental doctor. And her gut microbiome or gut biome will be very healthy. I'm sure that's what Dr. Seward's looking at. Well, I'm going to turn this down because we are. Well, I think we'll just pull away from the mic a little bit. That's more sensible than tinkering with the gain at this late stage. She complains of difficulty breathing satisfactorily at times, and of heavy lethargic sleep with dreams that frighten her, but regarding which she can remember nothing. She says that as a child she used to walk in her sleep, and that when in Whitby the habit came back, and that once she walked out in the night and went to the East Cliff, where Miss Murray found her. Now let's get back to the character, shall we? But she assures me that of late the habit has not returned. It's such a cod, bad unconvincing accent. I'm in doubt, and so I've done the best thing I know of. I've written to my old friend and master, Professor Van Helsing. We worked on a whelk stall in Whitechapel for some time, and he's from Amsterdam, who knows as much about obscure diseases as anyone in the world. I think he makes them up. I'm tempted to... Oh, yes, you have the... Can't do a Dutch accent to save my life, so I'm not going to. So it's going to be sort of European, Central European. They always sound Central European. Van Helsing should, I think, sound a bit like Count Dracula, just for the confusion. Blind Whippet's disease. Yeah, so he's an expert on obscure diseases because he makes them up. Yes, you have the green berry monkey disease because I say so. I've asked him to come over, and as you told me that all things were to be at your charge, I've mentioned to him who you are and your relations to Miss Westenra. This, my dear fellow, is in obedience to your wishes, for I'm only too proud and happy to do anything I can for her. Van Helsing would, I know, do anything for me for a personal reason. So no matter on what ground he comes, we must accept his wishes. He's a seemingly arbitrary man. This is because he knows what he's talking about better than anyone else. He is a philosopher and a metaphysician, and one of the most advanced scientists of his day, and he has, I believe, an absolutely open mind. Well, this, with an iron nerve, a temper of the ice brook, and indomitable resolution, self-command and toleration, exalted from virtues to blessings, and the kindliest and truest heart that beats, these form his equipment for the noble birth that he is doing for mankind, noble work that he's doing for mankind, work both in theory and practice, for his views are as wide as his all-embracing sympathy. Get a room, for God's sake. I tell you these facts that you may know why I have such confidence in him. I've asked him to come at once. I shall see Miss Westenra tomorrow again, and there'll be nuggets again. Not the pheasant nuggets, but the cheap budget chicken nuggets, because Mrs. Westenra Senior isn't out earning much money as a charlady around the streets of, where are we, Harrogate? I don't know. She is to meet me at the stores, so that I may not alarm her mother by too early a repetition of my call. Yours always, John Seward. Letter. Abraham Van Helsing, sounds a bit like Dracula, MD, DPH, D-Lit, etc., etc., to Dr. Seward. Oh, Dr. Seward, so good they took out the T. 2nd of September. My good friend, when I received your letter, I'm already coming to you. By good fortune, I can leave just at once, without wrong to any of those who have trusted me. Yeah, I don't have another patient for another fortnight. They're all dead. Were fortune other than it were bad for those who have trusted. For I come to my friend when he called me to aid those he holds dear. Tell your friend that when the time you struck from my wound so swiftly, the poison of the... Let's do that again. It's interesting. Tell your friend that when that time you suck from my wound so swiftly, the poison of the gangrene from that knife that our other friend, too nervous, let slip. You did more for him when he wants my aids, and you call for them than all his great fortune can do. No idea. But it is pleasure added to do for him, your friend. It is to you that I come. Have near at hand, and please it so arranged that we may see the young lady not too late on tomorrow. Not too late on tomorrow, for it is likely that I may have to return here that night. To the Travel Lodge in Seven Oaks. But if need be, I shall come again in 3 days and stay longer, if it must. Till then, goodbye, my friend, Van Helsing. Not to be confused with Van Johnson, the Hollywood star. Letter, Dr. Seward, to the Honourable Arthur Homewood. 3rd of September. My dear Art, Van Helsing has come and gone. He came on with me to Hillingham and found that, by Lucy's discretion, her mother was lunching out at a Toby Carvery. She always goes for the five meats. I'll have all the meats, please, so that we were not alone with her. Van Helsing made a very careful examination of the patient. He is to report to me, and I shall advise you, for of course I was not present all the time. He is, I fear, much concerned, but says he must think. Oh, the sound of NATO jets, how reassuring. When I told him of our friendship and how you trust to me in the matter, he said, you must tell him all you think. Tell him what I think, if you can guess it, if you will. Nay, I'm not jesting. This is no jest, but life and death, perhaps more. I asked what he meant by that, for he was very serious, not reflected in my reading of it. This was when we had come back to town, and he was having a cup of tea, Sainsbury's Red Label, as I recall, before starting on his return to Umstadum. He would not give me any further clue. You must not be angry with me, Art. I am turning into more of a barrow boy by the moment, because his very reticence means that all his brains are working for her good. He will plainly speak enough when the time comes, be sure. So I told him I would simply write an account of our visit, just as if I were doing a descriptive special article for the Daily Telegraph. He seemed not to notice, but remarked that the smuts of London were not quite so bad as they used to be when he was a student here. Oh, don't tell me the smuts of London have come back again. Am I imagining this if I read about the smuts of London? I'm to get his report tomorrow, if he can possibly make it. In any case, I'm to have a letter. Well, as to the visit, Lucy was more cheerful than on the day I first saw her, and certainly looked better. She had lost something of the ghastly look that so upset you, and her breathing was normal. She was very sweet, the Professor, as she always is, and tried to make him feel at ease, though I could see the poor girl was making a hard struggle for it. I believe Van Helsing saw it too, for I saw the quick look under his bushy brows that I knew of old. Then he began to chat of all things, except ourselves and diseases, and with such an infinite geniality that I could see poor Lucy's pretence of animation merge into reality. Then, without any seeming change, he brought the conversation gently round to the visit, and suavely said, my dear young miss, I have so great pleasure, because you are so much beloved. That is much, my dear, even were there that which I do not see. They told me you were down in the spirit, and that you were of ghastly pale, that you were of a ghastly pale, like a ghastly pale ale. To them I say, poof, and he snapped his fingers at me and went on, but you and I shall show them how wrong they are. How can he... And he pointed at me with the same look and gesture as that with which he pointed out his class. Oh, dear, am I just tired? And he pointed at me with the same look and gesture as that with which he pointed me out in his class, on or rather after a particular occasion which he never fails to remind me of, know anything of a young lady's. What? He has his madmen to play with, and to bring them back to happiness, and to those that love him. It is much to do, and, oh, but there are rewards in that we can bestow such happiness. But the young ladies, he has no wife nor daughter, and the young do not tell themselves to the young, but to the old, like me, who have known so many sorrows and the causes of them. So, my dear, we will send him away to smoke the cigarette in the garden whilst you and I have a little talk, all to ourselves. I took the hint and strolled about, and presently the Professor came to the window and called me in. He looked grave, but said, I have made careful examination, but there is no functional cause. With you I agree that there has been much blood lost. It has been, but is not. But the conditions of her are in no way anemic. I've asked her to send me her maid, that I may ask just one or two questions, that so I may not chance to miss nothing. I know well what she will say, and yet there is cause, there is always cause for everything. Now then, that's a very interesting statement. There's always cause for everything. Excess deaths, there's always cause for them. I must go back home and think. You must send me the telegram every day, and if there be cause, I shall come again. The disease for not to be well is a disease. Interest me. And the sweet young dear, she interests me too. She charmed me, and for her, if not for you or disease, I come. Well, like so many doctors, you can't understand a bloody word he says. As I tell you, he would not say a word more, even when we were alone. And so now, Art, you know all I know. I shall keep stern watch. I trust your poor father is rallying. It must be. Yeah, he is in Finland. It's the lake stage. Not easy, but he's in a Ford escort to Cosworth. Your poor father is rallying. It must be a terrible thing to you, my dear old fellow, to be placed in such a position between two people who are both so dear to you. I know your idea of duty to your father, and you are right to stick to it. But if need be, I shall send you word to come at once to Lucy, so do not be over-anxious unless you hear from me. And that's the end of that rather painful first appearance of, Gabriel von Helsing, whatever his name is. And let's have a little look. Dr. Stuart Seward's diary. 4th of September. Zoophagus patient still keeps up our interest in him. He had only one outburst, and that was yesterday, at an unusual time. Just before the stroke of noon, he began to grow restless. The attendant knew the symptoms and at once summoned aid. Fortunately, the men came at a run and were just in time, for at the stroke of noon he became so violent that it took all their strength to hold him. In about 5 minutes, however, he began to get more quiet, and finally sank into a sort of melancholy, due perhaps in part to cash in the attic, in which state he has remained up to now. The attendant tells me that his screams, whilst in the paroxysm, were really appalling. I found my hands full when I got in, attending to some of the other patients who were frightened by him. Indeed, I can quite understand the effect, for the sounds disturbed even me, though I was some distance away. It is now after the dinner hour of the asylum. When we get to eat the crispy dinosaurs, filled with a flaky cod, and sometimes coley, when the asylum can't afford the cod. But they're dinosaur shapes, and that seems to amuse the inmates. And as yet my patient sits in a corner, brooding, not touching his dinosaur nuggets, with a dull, sullen, woe-begone look in his face, which seems rather to indicate than to show something directly. I cannot quite understand it, despite my years of study in the realms of psychology at the Tavistock Institute. Later, another change in my patient. At 5 o'clock, I looked in on him and found him through the peephole, as I imagine, and found him seemingly as happy and contented as he used to be. Okay. He was catching flies and eating them, and was keeping note of his capture by making nail marks on the edge of the door between the ridges of padding. When he saw me, he came over and apologised for his bad conduct, and asked me in a very humble, cringing way to be led back to his own room, and to have his notebook again. No harm in that, I thought. I thought it well to humour him. So he is back in his room, with the window open. He has the sugar of his tea spread out on the windowsill and is reaping quite a harvest of flies. Are flies attracted to dry, granulated sugar, I suppose they are? He's not now eating them, but putting them into a box as of old, and is already examining the corners of his room to find a spider. I tried to get him to talk about the past few days, for any clue to his thoughts would be of an immense help to me, but he would not rise. For a moment he looked very sad and said in a sort of faraway voice, as though saying it rather to himself than to me, all over, he's deserted me. No hope for me now, unless I do it myself. Then suddenly, turning to me in a resolute way, he said, Doctor, won't you be very good to me and let me have a little more sugar? I think it would be very good for me. And the flies, I said. Yes, the flies like it too. And I like the flies, therefore I like it. And there are people who know so little as to think that madmen do not argue. I procured him a double supply and left him as happy a man as, I suppose, any in the world. Ooh, I wish I could fathom his mind. Well, another 20 years of studying psychology and psychiatry, maybe he will. Midnight, another change in him. I've been to see Miss Westenra, whom I found much better, and had just returned and was standing at our own gate looking at the sunset. At the sunset? At midnight? When once more I heard him yelling. As his room is on this side of the house, as his room is on this side of the house, I could hear it better than in the morning. It was a shock to me to turn from the wonderful smoky beauty of a sunset over London, with its lurid lights and inky shadows, and all the marvellous tints that come on foul clouds, even as on foul water, and to realise all the grim sternness of my own cold stone building with its wealth of breathing misery and my own desolate heart to endure it all. I thought that sentence was going to go on. As you can tell, I reached him just as the sun was going down and from his window saw the red disc sink. As it sank, he became less and less frenzied, and just as it dipped, he slid from the hands that held him, an inert mass on the floor. It is wonderful, however, what intellectual recuperative power lunatics have, for within a few minutes he stood up quite calmly and looked around him. I signalled to the attendants not to hold him, for I was anxious to see what he would do. He went straight over to the window and brushed out the crumbs of sugar. Then he took his fly box and emptied it outside and threw away the box. Then he shut the window and, crossing over, sat down on his bed. All this surprised me, so I asked him, "Are you going to keep the flies any more?" "No," said he, "I'm sick of all that rubbish." He certainly is a very interesting study. Wonderfully interesting study, as Bram Stoker has it, but let's not quibble over adjectives. Is it an adjective? I don't know. I get confused. I wish I could get some glimpse of his mind, or the cause of his sudden passion. Stop. There may be a clue, after all. If we can find why today his paroxysms came on at high noon and at sunset. Can it be that there is a malign influence of the sun at periods which affects certain natures, as at times the moon does others? Interesting speculation from Arthur. We shall see. Telegram, Seward, London, to Van Helsing, Amsterdam. 4th September. Patient still better today. He took 5 nuggets and a slice of Swiss roll raspberry. It's a budget one, though, not much jam. Telegram, Seward, London, to Van Helsing, Amsterdam. 5th September. Patient greatly improved. Good appetite. 5 pheasant nuggets, 2 dinosaur bites, another slice of Swiss roll, this time with custard, but it also has a synthetic cream. Sleeps naturally, good spirits, colour coming back. We had to bang the telly quite a lot, but the colour is finally coming back. Helps with the snooker. Telegram, Seward, London, to Van Helsing, Amsterdam. 6th September, terrible change for the worse. Come at once, do not lose an hour. I hold over telegram to Homewood till I've seen you. Chapter 10. And you know what? There's where we're going to leave it. It's exciting. It's building. It is building a treat. And let us not spoil ourselves by pushing on into the sunlit uplands of what will be, no doubt, one of the most exciting reads ever performed by a person in a small room with a Beyer dynamic microphone with a cloud lifter. Not really a cloud lifter, a version of a cloud lifter by the company called, can't remember, it's got a little light blue little crest on it, quite nice, and a grey band of some alloy metal, monkey metal probably. And so that's it, that's where we leave it. And I've not had any breakfast yet. It's 10:30, I've had 2 cups of tea. I read a little bit of, The Conservative Woman, which I do enjoy, and I'll not quite sure what I'll do now. I've got an Arthur Conan Doyle to read, and we'll see. Good to be back on the horse. It's been about 6 months since I last did one of these podcasts. So let me remind you that as much as it may seem that I've prepared these assiduously, I haven't actually looked at the text. I did attempt to read Dracula about 20 years ago, but probably skimmed it and didn't do it justice. But it's enjoyable. But as I say, not the most fluent reading, but you are getting the amazing insights and literary footnotes that I add, which I think informs the general complex tapestry of 19th century into 20th century Victorian and Edwardian literature. Yes, don't know why I'm talking like this. Don't know why I'm talking like this while the world burns with such terrible temperatures that we really do need to see you.